From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, as a new minimum wage takes effect in New York, a 200-member enforcement agency will make sure wage workers are paid properly. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on Governor Cuomo's free SUNY college tuition proposal. And a pipeline company planning an Orange County plant says a handful of residents face eminent domain proceedings. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. As a new minimum wage takes effect in New York, a 200-member multi-agency minimum wage enforcement and outreach unit has been launched. The body is in charge with ensuring that all minimum wage workers are paid properly. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
The Enforcement and Outreach Unit, a first of its kind in the nation, will also help businesses understand their responsibilities and workers understand their rights under the new wage regulations. Governor Andrew Cuomo announced the task force Monday in New York City.
Their purpose is to both inform and enforce. A lot of workers don't know that they just got a raise. And they need to know this because they need to make sure it is in their paycheck. A lot of employers don't know that the minimum wage went up, and they need to know it also. So these 200 investigators will be informing people and making sure the law is followed through.
In early 2016, Cuomo signed landmark legislation making New York the first state in the nation to enact a $15 minimum wage. The investigators and staffers are being assigned to spread the word about the increase and make sure businesses comply.
This is not a voluntary effort. It's not that we are recommending a nice idea that businesses raise the wage. This is the law. And if a business does not follow the law, they can be subject to significant monetary penalties, and they can also be subject to criminal penalties if it's egregious.
Cuomo stressed the importance of enacting the new law quickly and fairly. Commissioner of Labor Roberta Reardon detailed a three-pronged comprehensive plan for educating those affected.
The first is business services. Business services will help businesses with identifying the proper pay rate for their employees. They will assist both workers and businesses in understanding any changes in the minimum wage, with a special focus on those for whom English is not their first language. And we are establishing regional representatives and communications so that workers and businesses in every part of the state can know their rights. The second component is outreach. Unit staff members have been and will continue to proactively contact business and worker advocate organizations throughout the state and offer webinar and in-person presentations to help them understand how the minimum wage requirements work in their area. And the third component, of course, is enforcement. Now, the New York State Department of Labor is charged with enforcing the minimum wage law. Part of this process is ensuring that businesses are held accountable and that everyone is upholding the law.
The state's new minimum wage varies by region. It is now $9.70 upstate, $10 in Westchester County and on Long Island, $11 in New York City, $10.50 for small businesses there employing 10 or fewer. Cuomo believes it will change people's lives for the better because the wage hike represents a long overdue increase.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Well, Alan, the session, legislative session, started this week on Wednesday. Let's say even before it began, it's not going well.
Well, it isn't going well. There are a number of reasons for that. You have a governor at war with the legislature, and that means the Democrats and the Republicans. Look, it's one thing about social policy, passing substantive legislation. It's another thing when you say you can't have a raise unless you do this, this, and thus. And the legislature got up on its hind legs and said, no, we don't succumb to bribery. Are you kidding? As they haul another guy off, you know, for bribery or something like it? This is ridiculous. And the legislature ought to be ashamed of itself for not passing decent ethics reform. We all know that. And the people of New York State know it. So the governor decides, well, he's going to show them. And he says, instead of having the state of the state in one place, I'm going to have it in six places. You're not going to be getting the prestige of sitting there, you know, having this way in which governors communicate with legislatures in terms of social policy, political policy. You're not going to have that. And I'm taking that away from you. Well, of course, that has raised holy hell, and they're really angry. And here comes the governor. He has a whole bunch of things he wants to do, and he raises the issue quite correctly of college education for free for people who make less than $125,000. This legislature, particularly the state Senate, is not about to go along with this, and they will raise all kinds of stuff. I think the Assembly, which has passed it before, will be bound to do that. I think the Senate, which is aided and abetted by the so-called Independent Democratic Conference, is going to say, no, that's my bet. Now, whether people will get in the face of Jeff Klein, the Democrat from where? The Bronx, which is why people are calling this group the traitors, and go along with the Republicans is anybody's bet. But it is an auspicious beginning of the legislative session that we are seeing.
Is there a possibility that we may return to the days of late budgets, as I'm seeing mentioned in many articles now?
Absolutely. It won't look good for the legislature. Now, the reason we don't have late budgets anymore is that the legislature realized that New Yorkers, who know almost nothing about state politics, only knew one thing. They knew the budget is late, the budget is late, the budget is late. And so they decided to give an on-time budget. Now, that is, I think, a new standard. I don't think the legislature wants a late budget. I don't think they want to hold it up because it'll give the governor more opportunity to bash them for being derelict in their essential duty to come up with this stuff. So it's possible we'll have a late budget because I don't think right now a lot of people are talking to each other. But on the other hand, I do think it's something that the legislature has to be very careful about, and I think the governor knows it.
Over the weekend, in the dead of night, as often happens in the state legislature, Governor Andrew Cuomo vetoed a bipartisan bill that would have required the state to fund legal services for the poor, a bill that the New York Civil Liberties Union called the most important criminal justice reform legislation in memory. That prompted one article I saw on Deadspin with the headline, Andrew Cuomo is a snake.
Yes, and it had another adjective in there, I believe. However, I can only say that this was a very important bill because the people who are accused by the system of doing something wrong or who need redress on the civil side can't get it. So how do you deal with a legal system where a lawyer can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars if you can't get any help? And this is a great shame. The problem here is that people don't have a lot of regard for people who have less money than they do. The poor have always been shamed in this country. It's terrible. And I have a feeling that this governor who came in, remember, as a conservative, as a fiscal conservative, is saying, you know, I'm not going to lose a lot because of this politically. And I think we all understand that he is motivated. He's got to have another election for governor. And then there are many people who think he will run for president of the United States. I'm one of them. I think if he can do it, he will. And it depends on what the quality of the opposition is and all the rest. So he did what he thought was politically correct, I believe. But there's no way to prove it. He says it would put the budget out of balance. He also gave a press conference, a couple of press conferences, David, in which he talked about the end of perhaps of Medicaid, the end of the president's signature health care program, the Affordable Care Act, as putting the state budget way out of whack because of the money that we've been getting from the feds up until now. And so he's in the catbird seat. He has to make these decisions. But I'm not surprised that for the middle class comes anybody under $125,000 gets a college education, and for the poor, very, very little.
Meanwhile, one of the other ingredients in the soup here is one U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara. Staying tuned.
Well, PPRR goes up to visit with Mr. Trump. He is reappointed, the correct thing to do. Preet Bharara is about to put two of the, dare I say it, pals of the governor on trial, and a third who is closely, Lane Caliaros, who is closely associated. There are a lot of people holding their breath in Albany saying, will the governor be called to testify? He has already said, for the defense, he's already said he would. So the question is, what do the guys who are going on trial, we know one has already pled guilty, and one is the closest friend Cuomo has had in politics, whether or not they're going to say something that will in some way touch the governor. And that is all anybody's talking about in Albany right now.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustino. A Capital Region lawmaker has pledged to introduce a bill to require Governor Andrew Cuomo to stay in Albany when he delivers his State of the State message. The governor plans to bring his annual address on the road this month. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard.
Under the state constitution, the governor must address the legislature once a year. It's typically served up as a State of the State speech at the beginning of the session to inform lawmakers of the governor's agenda. Since 2011, Governor Andrew Cuomo has held his annual State of the State and budget address outside of the traditional venue of the Assembly Chambers and inside the Convention Center at the Empire State Plaza in Albany. Now Cuomo is breaking with his own trend by taking his address on the road. Stops have been announced for New York City, Western New York, the Hudson Valley, Long Island, Capital Region, and Central New York. But one Capital Region lawmaker is hoping to see Cuomo stay put. Republican Assemblyman Jim Tedisco, who will assume the role of state senator in the new year, has pledged to introduce a bill to require the governor to bring the address back to Assembly Chambers.
I'm not opposed to him traveling across the state and talking about the various parts of the state of the state and this new plan and how it relates to the different regions. What I'm opposed to him is him watering down and disrespecting the elected officials that the public has put in place as a part of these checks and balances.
Tedisco referred to the governor's tour as a dog and pony show, a remark that drew sharp criticism from Cuomo's spokesman Rich Azzopardi.
It's good to know that Assemblyman Tedisco, who is best known for his dog and pony shows, is focused on the important stuff. We'll leave that to him while the governor is taking his message on how to move New York forward directly to New Yorkers.
Azzopardi also sent WAMC photos of Tedisco with animals, including dogs and horses. Tedisco is a longtime advocate for animal rights laws. The governor's State of the State in recent years has included videos and honored guests. It also typically features the state's constitutional office holders, some of whom have been feuding with the executive branch. Retiring Republican Senator Hugh Farley, who served for 40 years in a district that stretches from Schenectady to the central Adirondacks, noted the governor's style.
When he moved it to the convention center, it became more of a production than it did a message to the legislature.
Tedisco believes Cuomo may be seeking to avoid lawmakers this year.
I think he wants to bypass the legislature because he doesn't want to see people like Assemblyman Barron stand up and take him to task.
Assemblyman Charles Barron, a Democrat from Brooklyn, approached the governor's podium last January and interrupted the address.
Okay, Assemblyman, let me finish and then you'll have your turn. Okay, everybody sees you and everybody heard you. Have a seat, Assemblyman.
Outside groups say there's tension between the governor and lawmakers because of the governor's opposition to a pay raise for the legislature and his own commissioners. In the final weeks of 2016, Cuomo offered to put a pay raise on the table if lawmakers would meet in a special session to address ethics reform. The session did not happen. Blair Horner, executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, told WAMC the situation between the two branches over the pay raise has become toxic and that moving the address out of Albany won't help.
I think the legislature will view this as sort of an act of war.
Barb Bartoletti, legislative director for the New York State League of Women Voters, agreed.
He may be afraid that he will get to the convention center and no legislators will show up because there was some talk of a boycott.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
A pipeline company with plans to hook up to a power plant under construction in Orange County says eminent domain proceedings remain against a handful of landowners. More from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
Millennium Pipeline Company's eminent domain proceedings began in November, shortly after receiving approval from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission for its Valley Lateral project. The project involves the installation of about 7.8 miles of 16-inch diameter pipe between Millennium's main line and the CPV Valley Energy Center under construction in Wayweyanda. The combined cycle gas power plant is expected to produce 650 megawatts. Michelle Hook is spokeswoman for Millennium.
And so once we received our FERC certificate saying that there was, in fact, a purpose and a need for this project, we went ahead and decided to file the eminent domain proceeding so we could move forward with the project.
She says after various settlements with landowners, there are currently four proceedings, including some involving multiple parcels. She says one of the four landowners is Orange County.
But that is more what we refer to as a friendly condemnation, meaning that they would rather us go through the eminent domain proceeding, though it is not contentious in any way with the county. We have discussed this with them at length.
In an emailed statement, Orange County Attorney Langdon Chapman says it made more sense to see if Millennium gets all of its required permits before granting an easement over county land, which in this case is a railroad bed. Chapman says it struck him as putting the cart before the horse otherwise. Hook says Millennium still needs some state permits.
Even if we get the land through eminent domain proceedings, we still have to wait to get our state permits before we could begin any construction.
Hook says the company has reached agreement with 83% of landowners for the pipeline route. Pramila Malik is chair of Protect Orange County, whose members include landowners impacted by the pipeline and CPV plant.
So, I mean, this is clearly not a case of public need, but rather corporate greed. Millennium and CPV are basically trying to short-circuit the process because they don't actually have all of their permits yet. And it's typical of Millennium's bullying tactics, and they've been bullying us, since 2006 in our community.
Malik has been fighting the CPV plant for years and has environmental concerns about Millennium's pipeline project.
There's a number of ecological concerns. We have endangered species habitat. We have wetlands. Wetlands are critical to water quality. And when you put a pipeline in, it doesn't just impact that landowner. It impacts the entire community because we all depend on groundwater resources. So if the pipeline contaminates the groundwater, it impacts all of us.
Hook says Millennium will use horizontal directional drilling, or HDD, on all of its pipeline construction on landowners' property.
And what that means is we start way back from the landowner's property and actually go under the property. So we're not digging up and trenching anyone's yard, if that's the image that people might get when they think that we're putting pipe there. There will be no disturbance and, in many cases, no real knowledge that we're even there going about, 6 feet under these landowners' homes and properties.
Malik says she knows the landowners in the eminent domain proceedings, and she urges the following.
It's extremely important that the water quality certification proceed with a complete and full evaluation of the impacts before any approvals are issued.
Hook says Millennium uses eminent domain only as a last resort after failing to reach agreements with landowners.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. City councilors in Plattsburgh, New York, received the mayor's budget proposal in October and must finalize the fiscal plan by mid-January. The six-member board is still considering amendments as they try to lower a tax levy that at one point looked like it could be as high as 22%, something many cities across the state have faced this year. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was at the last meeting of 2016 and filed this report.
Plattsburgh City Councilors spent most of their work session and regular meeting Wednesday evening reviewing amendments to the proposed 2017 budget. Outgoing Mayor James Calnon reviewed amendments to health care, fire payroll, cleaning services, city historian payroll, and a new traffic violations officer. Confusion over the proposals appeared evident as Ward 1 Democrat Rochelle Armstrong began reviewing the health care amendments.
I don't know if many people have received this breakdown of the proposals.
Well, I mean, mine have been out there for a week or so, and what happened today has not been published because, in fact, there's at least, you know, one question that wasn't resolved until the work session tonight, so.
I'd like to make a comment. It's been talked about in the last 3 weeks, actually.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about it at three budget sessions.
So the only ones that are new, the ones I got today, maybe an hour and a half ago.
They're not new items.
Because we've talked about it.
They're newly specified.
Armstrong offered an amendment calling for $95,000 in reductions to the police department, equivalent to three vacant positions. Ward 5 Democrat Becky Casper raised a point of order.
These are significant amendments now. I really am very uncomfortable about pushing this to a vote right now, considering that they have gone through so many iterations. And frankly, personally, and also given the issue of transparency, I would prefer to wait on to have these amendments clarified. And we're looking at an email rather than taking the time to say, okay, this is exactly what this amendment is, and this is exactly what it entails.
A number of city residents stepped up to comment on the budget process. They are not happy with the work that councilors have been doing and their inability to keep the budget under or near the state-mandated cap of 1.5%. Jeff Moore was among the critics.
I would once again urge you people to meet the tax cap. The city has a spending problem, not a revenue problem. You need to live within your means. And I'm tired of hearing these bait-and-switch things where, oh, we're going to have to raise the tax levy 22%. But, oh, wait a minute. We're going to do a great job. We're going to lower it down to 8. I could balance this budget in 5 minutes. Come on. You haven't done a good job up to now, and it's time to step up to the plate and do your jobs.
Sue Moore, city resident. The taxpayers are maxed out and sick and tired of bailing out bumbling administrations who refuse year after year to be fiscally responsible, stop threatening the taxpayers with huge tax increases.
Resident Bob Smith, on the other hand, offered budget reduction suggestions, such as privatizing trash and snow removal and reducing street sweeping for the councilors to consider.
These suggestions are meant to show the seriousness of our spending routine with an income that is no longer robust enough to support our spending habits. This needs to be evaluated and decided upon for the public good, and any short-term inconvenience needs a good-faith effort to minimize such inconvenience.
At the end of the meeting, Councillor Armstrong addressed concerns of the taxpayers that the city is moving toward a double-digit tax increase. She says the idea of raising taxes 22% was considered only if they kept spending at current levels.
This has been an exercise in trying to reconcile what the costs were with what we needed to do if we wanted to maintain services exactly as they are. And, build in a cushion for contingencies. We're coming down to the nitty-gritty with some very serious thought toward cutting costs.
The Plattsburgh City budget must be finalized by January 14th.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. That's for program number 1701. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers. representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.